Our 10-minute speaker is Trish G. from San Diego.
I'm Trish. I'm an alcoholic. And I want to thank my buddy Paul for bringing me with him tonight to be his 10-minute speaker. And I'm going to share a little bit about Paul, just a little bit. I know Paul from high school. We both went to a high school that's right around this area, and I remember Paul because there was a big controversy with police involvement with some things that were going on, and Paul was the star of the show. And, you know, that's how I remember him from high school. And then fast forward, you know, here I am trying to get sober, and I'm at this dance, and there's this guy, and I recognize him. And it was Paul, and he was like, hey, you know, like doing that number. And I'm like, yeah, and this is Dave. And he's like, oh, I know Dave from a meeting. And it ends up, so now I married this guy named Dave, and Dave and Paul are best friends. And, you know, it's just a beautiful thing in the sobriety, you know, the relationships that we get. You know, Paul's wife, Kari, is one of my best friends. And to me, that's one of, you know, there's no replacing that. And it's a true friendship, you know, it's from the heart. And we share journeys, and we do vacations together, and we do AA together. And I didn't want anything like that when I was drinking because, you know, you're going to take mine or, you know, you're going to get in my way or something like that. And it's definitely a different way to live. And, you know, it's ironic just how similar we are, because I had to speak a little while ago, and I needed a 10-minute speaker. And I asked my husband, and he's like, hell no, I'm not being your 10-minute speaker. So then I'm like, hey, Paul, will you be my 10-minute speaker? He's like, absolutely. And so here we are here, and Paul asks his wife, hey, Kari, will you be my 10-minute speaker? And she's like, no way. Hey, Trisha, will you be my 10-minute speaker? You know, so I think it's easier to say no to a husband than it is to a friend. I don't know. But certainly, thank you, Paul. It's good to be here with you. So I have a sobriety date. It's January 9th, 2005. I have a home group. It's a Thursday night Step and Tradition meeting, and I have a sponsor who's here tonight, so that's a pretty cool thing. And January 9th, 2005 is not my first sobriety date. Hopefully it's my last. And, you know, I came in and out of these rooms for a good 3 years before I finally got the gift of desperation, which is the best way that I could describe it, because that's what it was. I was desperate enough to do whatever it took, to fully surrender, and to do what people were suggesting to me. You know, where before I did it, but I was still holding back. You know, it's like, well, but, you know, I'm good in this area. And that just brings me to, like, my relationship with God and the whole Step 3 concept, because I think that was another big deal in that 3 years that I went in and out and couldn't get a year, you know, was that I had a relationship with God. When I first came into these rooms, I was like, you know, read the steps. I'm like, no big deal, you know, and saw this God word, and I'm like, no big deal. You know, I got a relationship with God, and so I really felt I didn't have a lot of work to do in that area. And when I came back in with the sobriety that I have today, the biggest thing that I found was a difference in step two. You know, the whole came to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity. I had to realize that that was in all aspects of my life. You know, in the big book, I call it the second step proposition. It talks about God either is or he isn't. You know, what was our choice to be? And that resonated in me, that God is everything in my life or he's nothing in my life. What was my choice to be? And those are just some of the things that were, you know, big differences for me, you know, with the sobriety. And I'd been, you know, I'd been to treatment centers, a few of them, you know, 30 days here, you know, outpatient there, you know, whatever. And you know, that when I think about my arrogance in regards to my relationship with God, I think about being up in the mountains at this treatment center, and every day at like 2, we'd read from the big book, and that day they said we were going to read the agnostics, and I was pissed because I wasn't an agnostic, and it's a waste of my time, don't you see? And there's better chapters, you know, Into Action, that talks about a lot of steps, you know, we should read that. And I can just remember that feeling of being so upset that I have to sit there and read We Agnostics. And today, We Agnostics is one of my favorite chapters because I got so much from that chapter. My relationship with God grew through that chapter because I had God in a certain box, and this was my God, and that's where it stayed. And there were certain times that I really honored that God, and other times where it was like, I'm just going through the day, and Trisha's in charge, and here we go. And through that chapter, I've learned a lot, which is a big deal for me. So, you know, during that 3 years of in and out, it was really hard to surrender. You know, I loved hearing them more about alcoholism tonight. I don't hear that in a lot of meetings, and that's just a really cool 10 minutes left? That's just a really cool part of sorry, I thought I was only up here for 10 minutes, but now I'm thrown off. Sorry. Lost my thought. There we go, 5 minutes. Okay, woohoo, moving on. But that was a quick five. And I did completely lose my thought, so I'll jump to another one. You know, I remember during that 3 years that I couldn't get this program, I'd hear terms in the rooms like chronic relapser, and I thought that was me. And I'd look around the rooms and I'd say, how come she's getting it? How come he's getting it? How come they get to stay? Why aren't I getting it? What am I doing wrong? I guess I'm just a chronic relapser. I guess I'm just always going to relapse and I'm never going to get this deal, you know? And I stand here tonight saying that wasn't my truth. You know, I kind of thought it might be my truth, but, you know, again, at the crux of everything for me was that relationship with God and that gift of desperation. When I came in January 9th, 2005, I was at a bottom. I was at a different bottom because at that point in time, I didn't have a job that I needed to get sober for. I didn't have a guy that I needed to get sober for. And prior to that, it had been the influence of my mom that I had tried to get sober for. And we were just like, I had to live with her for a month because of a restraining order. So we weren't really on good terms by the time I came back in the room. So I came in here completely desperate with no reason to come in here except for the fact that I'm an alcoholic, you know, and I can see where this is going, you know, and I know what I need to do. I need to go back into AA. I need to surrender. And, you know, through God's grace, I met different people in this journey. And I met people who would say these things, and I'm like stuck, you know, just like dumbfounded by what they said. Oh, my gosh, where did you hear? What is that? And they'd open the book, and they'd show me where it was in the book. Oh, my God, you know, I couldn't believe it. And, I mean, they had the message that carried depth and weight, and that was the big difference for me. It wasn't fluffy. It wasn't, it's okay, boo-boo, go home and take a bubble bath and you'll feel better. You know, it was, you know, if you drink again, you're going to die. You know, I mean, it was like, you know, life or death stuff, because that's what we have here, you know. And so I started following this crowd, you know, and I saw that they not only lived by the book, you know, that they spoke a language that was so attractive to me as an alcoholic, you know, and there was solution in what they shared. And they not only spoke it, you know, they talked the talk and they walked the walk, because I watched them. I think that's a very important thing to do in these rooms is, you know, you can hear people get up at a podium and they'll spout all this glorious stuff and great, you know, quote this, quote that. But then what do you see them do? What do you see them do in the rooms? The gal that took 1 year, happy birthday. I loved your enthusiasm. It just rocked me. And it made me think about the big difference for me, too, was at 30 days, this time around, when I realized I could stick my hand out to someone else that was brand new in the room and say, welcome, you know, here's the coffee, there's the restroom, can I get your phone number? And started to be of service to other people. And, you know, all along I had taken commitments at meetings because I was told early on that, you know, the baby elephant in the middle of the herd, you know, that's where you're protected. And, you know, even had my sponsor challenge me, like, why do you always hang on the fringe of the roof, Tricia? You're going to fall off if you're on the fringe of the roof. You know, get in the middle of the group. But it was that concept of really feeling like I had something to give early on in sobriety. My very, very first sponsor that I had used to drill into me, Tricia, your primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And the way that I heard that is that my primary purpose is to stay sober. Big, long pause. And then someday, when you're sober and you got this thing, then you can help somebody else. And that's not what it says. And so realizing that at 30 days, I could be of service to somebody else, you know. And I started talking to new women that were coming into the rooms, and I was taking their phone calls. And I was having an experience that was just profound to me, because they would be ready to drink, and I would be on the phone, and words would come out of my mouth talking to them on the phone. And I would hang up the phone and think, where the heck did that come from? That wasn't me. And I got to experience being that channel of, you know, of God, being a channel of the hope and the promises in this room, you know, by being willing to be of service to other people, by being willing to reach out and pick up the phone and call someone or answer that phone when it rings. And that was another huge deal for me. You know, today, the aspect of being at service at my meetings is huge. Another thing I had learned early on was this concept of training your feet, which was, what? Training your feet. But there were many times that I'd, you know, go to work and have just a really rough day and come home from work and be really tired or be cramping. Oh, that's a good one. I don't want to go to that meeting tonight, you know, and I wouldn't go to the meeting. So the concept of training my feet was, don't let your head come into play. You know, you train your feet. You decide what your schedule is going to be. You make AA your priority, and you do what you say you're going to do in AA, and the rest of your life falls around it. And that, you know, it's funny because the training the feet concept has gotten to me where I'm always raising my hand. I'm taking commitments at meetings. I'm being of service at meetings. And, you know, that's where, to me, pride can be an asset of mine, because I don't want to let the meeting down. I don't want to, you know, not be of service to them. And you know, so that's like a good thing for me. So, again, it's an honor to come here and be of service, to share with you all. And you got a great speaker tonight. Thanks.
Thank you.